Leafs talk. I'm JD Bunkus. He's Sam McKee. Leafs hold on is the way that I would put that one. They beat the New York Rangers 3-2, keep things rolling with the wins. I really don't have much about Toronto tonight outside of they were opportunistic, and their goaltender was once again phenomenal.
Repeat from last show. Stolar's praise, opportunistic goals.
It's one of those Stolar shows. Hit the Stolar's button. How many times have we done that this season?
Not to do like big picture stuff right off the top, but I don't know if you heard Berube today at morning skate. Joshua Cloak asked him about his goaltending plan for the rest of the year and like heading towards the playoffs. And Berube was particularly frank about the situation, more than I'd ever heard him say that, like, yeah, once we get the playoffs, you really want one guy to run with it. And, you know, that's different from what he said. He hasn't really alluded to anything like that all year. Maybe it's because they're getting closer. And now, you know, Anthony Stolarz gets two starts in a row here on, you know, two games in a row where he's both really, really good in both. And, you know, maybe Joe Wall's cough was starting to feel a little better after he heard his coach speak this morning, where he's like, oh, okay, I didn't realize that this was a true competition. I thought it was a 50-50. But another statement win for Stolarz, for who I think has been, you know, they're probably, not probably, their MVP in the games he's played, and another really good one tonight. So there's a bit of a statement after what the coach said this morning.
Yeah, I think it's pretty crazy that, like, Nylander is, like, still on pace right now to break the Swedish goal-scoring record. Like, he's right there. He's going to pass more goals per season, potentially, or in any season, than Mats Sundin ever had. Mitch Marner is having a phenomenal year, and I think that he is the team's MVP, given that he's, you know, he plays in all the games and Stolarz has had an injury. I think that Chris Tanev and Jake McCabe have been a revelation for this team when they've played together. They've been just about as much as you could possibly ask them to be. Yeah. And yet when Anthony Stolarz plays games, he's been the Leafs' best player, right? Like, in a season with those positive stories, the goaltender that they signed, the backup from Florida, the player that was unproven, who people wanted to see more from, has been just a bona fide grade A stud. And I understand Berube's comments, but I think that's pretty common for any coach to say. Like, I actually don't read too much into that. Like, if we're going to discuss it, of course you'd rather one guy run with it, because that means that the one guy is winning all the games. Like, he's hot and you don't have to have the thought of it. I still believe that if the Leafs are in a series and one of these goalies has maybe two rougher nights in a row, they're going to pivot to whoever the other guy is. Like, I don't think that there's anything either of these goalies could possibly do to ensure a level of security in a postseason series that is like what a Vasilevsky would have, or what, like, the guy in the opposite net would have if the Rangers make the playoffs. But what I will say is, the fact that you have both of these guys and they've played so well is, to me, the number one reason why this team should be more aggressive at the deadline than years past. And, like, yeah, we're doing big picture stuff here because, God, the small picture stuff for this game is a little less.
Yeah, they got completely caved in and looked awful for 85% of the game.
Yeah, they didn't show up for the first period and they got some super opportunistic goals. The bottom six was just a vicious nightmare tonight, where
I thought the fourth line had some moments, but the third line was giveth and taketh. And tonight was a take night. Not a lot there.
I thought Reeves had some hits, and I thought Kampf was really good on the penalty kill. But yeah, either way, just it wasn't an endearing night for the depth players. Like, yeah, you see in Benoit and Timmins kicking around here on the replays. They weren't exactly stellar tonight. But the goaltender is so damn good. Both guys are so damn good. I don't think the Leafs are going to go into a series where it doesn't feel like their guys are the advantage, and that even if one of them isn't going great, that the other is going to be able to pick them up. And the Leafs have had, like, they had Jack Campbell get hot in the COVID season. I do think Freddie Anderson was underappreciated, but still not this, like, nothing even close to like this. You got to go back to Belfour. You got to go back to Cujo to be able to find the level of confidence that the Leafs have in net heading into the postseason with these two guys.
Yeah, I like the point about the deadline and wanting to be aggressive because of what they're getting from their goalies. Yeah. I think with what Vasilevsky's looked like in the last, I think he's played nine games in a row for them. And he's, you know, I think he's got like 950 save percentage over that time. Like he's been out of this world good and they look really good. Yeah, I think outside of him, and the Leafs have had a lot of success against him. I understand that. But outside of him, I mean, it's the, you have the biggest advantage in the Eastern Conference. Like Bobrovsky's been great in the playoffs, but he's been really, really pedestrian this year. You know, Logan Thompson's been really good, but you know, it's still, I would say not totally unproven, but close to unproven in terms of him carrying a team to a final. So we'll see how it goes here. But yeah, going into pretty much any playoff series, you feel pretty good. And yeah, you see the Leafs decor tonight and you see their bottom six and you're like, yeah, okay. Yeah, the goalies are nice and you have some good forwards, but boy, Treliving's got to get to work here because, you know, all of Rekman Larson goes out tonight. He didn't play, what, the last 5 or 6 minutes? I didn't really identify what happened. But now, you know, we talked about this how many shows ago? Like, do we speak this into existence? You know, you talk about what happens if one of your top four guys go out and then two of the top four guys go out in succession here. And now it's just every shift there was Benoit, Timmins, or Myers involved, it felt like. And, you know, McCabe's doing his best. He's working, you know, but he's just not the same player without Tanev. And that's fair. Like, you play them together. They play really well. But when you put them with Myers, it's a little bit of a different story. They need desperate help on the decor right now. And, you know, the silver lining to these guys getting hurt is that, you know, it underlines that more heading towards the deadline, where Tree can look at this decor and regardless of how long they're going to be out. And I don't even know how bad Oliver Ekman Larson's hurt. You know, Tanev didn't seem too serious, but they really do need help on the decor.
Yeah, it just remains the same thing. They need the same help in the same two areas. They need a depth center that can help balance out some of their talent group.
Yeah.
And they could really desperately use another right shot D that could slot into their top four and not have you feel super nervous about it, who bumps out one of the bottom six guys or the bottom pairing guys who have been not great. And yeah, like prices are expensive come deadline time. I'm Mr. Don't make aggressive moves at the deadline. Like that is one of my bread and butter beliefs with hockey is that you make nightmarish moves that haunt you come trade deadline time for marginal gains. I look at this goaltender right now, Stolarz, and I feel this immeasurable amount of confidence in him. Like, can I ask you this? Like the Leafs are getting hemmed in tonight. And I know that he had a couple of posts but they go up 3-2. And even still, I feel like they're not going to blow this lead. And part of that is that they haven't all season long, but also they're missing Chris Tanev and OEL goes out, like you said, for the final five. And it still didn't really affect the way that I was feeling about the game. And I really believe that if you're feeling that watching the game, you got to think that the players feel the same way playing in front of Stolarz, that the Leafs have an immeasurable amount of confidence in front of them too. And so, yeah, I cannot recall a time, like I said, in the salary cap era, going all the way back to, it's got to be Belfour during, I think, his second season with the Leafs, where he really ingratiated himself and he was spectacular. And then Curtis Joseph in his primety prime, where it's felt this way.
Yep, totally. And I think the Tanev loss, it just, you know, we talk about MVPs and seeing the way they were so disjointed defensively tonight. Yeah. The reason they spent so much time in the defensive zone is because they, you know, he's your cycle killer. He makes the little plays along the boards where he makes these little support passes and he's great on the backhand. He's great on the forehand, getting pucks out of the zone, eating pucks where, you know, he blocks a shot. It falls down right in front of him, gets it out, ups it to the forwards. And they were so disconnected defensively tonight in the defensive zone. They couldn't complete a pass. They couldn't really get a stretch pass going. I thought they had a few odd man rushes in the first period, but it just came off a lot of Rangers mistakes. I didn't think that they had a lot of connectivity defensively. And I guess it's a lot, you know, it's to be understood when you don't have your defensive MVP out there, who's kind of a quarterback for them. Their penalty good was surprisingly good without spending their penalty kill was surprisingly good without him tonight, I thought.
Yeah.
But he does a lot for them, and it really showed how little communication and connectivity they had on the defensive end.
Yeah, I don't think that the Rangers, I'm glad you brought up the penalty kill, because again, this is an easy game to look at and just kind of talk about the negatives, because yeah, the Leafs, they got outplayed and it feels like they stole one tonight on the backs of their goaltender. It's very familiar, but Marner and Kampf right now are just on an absolute heater on the penalty kill. Like what is your level of confidence when you're watching those two guys together, right? Like they are just feeding off of one another. They're making great reads. Kampf uses his size incredibly well. I actually felt as though, again, Leafs fourth line did not do well. The numbers are not going to reflect a positive night for the fourth line, but I do feel at times like a game like tonight where Kampf's value really shows up, and it's harder to see when it comes to like the nerd numbers. It's one that you really got to pay close attention to.
Yeah. I mean, Kampf to me is a playoff guy for this team. Like, you know, he's just been here for how many years? Is this his third year or fourth year as a Leaf?
Third.
I trust him in playoff scenarios. He's just long. He's rangy, makes good defensive reads. He knows what he is as a player. He doesn't try to do too much, and he is good on the penalty kill, and he gets the puck in deep for you on the, like when you have your fourth line out there, you can spend some time in the offensive zone. He's a guy that a lot of Leaf fans include. This is his fourth year as Leaf. Time flies. But that's what Luke just said to us.
Yeah, because it's the second year of his second contract, because he got a two-year deal, and then this was the second year of the four-year deal.
He's definitely a guy that Leaf fans are quick to ship out because of so few guys outside of the top forward that make any money on this team for when you can, you know, put together your fantasy trade packages. But I do think that he's an important guy for them, and specifically on the penalty kill. And the penalty kill has been such an Achilles heel for them in the playoffs in years past that he's been part of that. I understand, but I do trust him as a penalty killer. And when you pair him with Chris Tanev at his peak on the penalty kill, Stolarz, like, I do think that the potential is there for them to have a good penalty kill in the playoffs when all the sort of long season numbers get wiped out and you just kind of start blank. I do think the potential is there for them to have an effective penalty kill with some of the elements they have. And Kampf's a big part of that for me.
Yeah, I got to say, like,
were they 15th or 16th in the league this year? They were really good at the start. They've kind of had a dip here, but I do think the elements are there.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I just, again, it's, to me, so much of it just starts with Marner and Kampf, and that's why you can get away with not having a Chris Tanev. I don't think that the Rangers, a lot of their chances tonight were from the outside. They had some good looks. There's no doubt that Stolarz made some good saves. But I thought that their penalty or their power play was a little bit disjointed at times. But either way, just good on the Leafs because they took care of business. The power play was not so much tonight. It's now been the Four Nations since the break. The top guys haven't really scored. The second lines pick them up again. OEL with just a beautiful bomb to start this game. Really, Leafs take advantage of the early parts of periods in this one, right?
Yeah.
First goal is the OEL bomb with the second unit coming out, like in the, I want to say less than 2 minutes into the game. And then the second goal is a horrific line change by the Rangers where they just get caught sleeping and a puck just trickles over the goal line. That the refs who were blind tonight, this was a blind night for the refs. They were having a tough go. Didn't see
Ozo night for the Stripes tonight. Really bad both ways. Awful, awful night.
Yeah. We don't talk about the refs, but that was if you're trying to get playoff games, that crew tonight is burning the tape.
Sometimes it scares me when we have the same brain, but I'm like, something tells me these guys won't be going past the first round either.
The fact that they had to even convene for the Nylander high stick, where a linesman
back heel high stick into a guy's mouth.
The linesman standing right there looking at the play. All the refs, that's where the action is. Nylander swings his stick as recklessly as you will ever see a guy swing a stick, and it nails the guy right in the chops. And the refs had to get together and go, did you see it? And they all went, nobody saw it, but we got to just
look at Willie's face. Look at him. Yeah. He can't even hide it. He can't even contain it. He obviously did it.
The Tavares penalty too, man. Oh, just what the hell was that?
Yeah.
When's the last time you saw that?
The guy engages him, like hacks his stick, grabs onto him, and then just loses a battle. And the ref is just so excited to call that. Like he couldn't wait to call, like, the guy's engaged. Oh, he got his arm up so quick. He was so excited about that. And you never see Tavares get mad. Like, this rare, has he ever been mad about anything? And like, he was MFing the ref for that one. That's his, like,
well, it's not even like a chop or a bit of a trip.
He fell over. 2 minutes of being strong. Like, he just body bagged him. He put him down, and the ref just couldn't wait to call it. So yeah, tough night for the refs. But you talk about the power play, and I texted this to you. This has been one of my thoughts from earlier in the year when it was struggling. I still don't think they've given all of Rekman Larson enough of a long look on the top unit. I really trust his decision-making skills. I trust that he can hammer the puck a little bit. And I know they like the five forwards, and I do like Mitch Marner in that decision-making, in that decision-making spot at the top. I understand why they do that, but it needs a little jolt right now. It needs a little wake-up call, that top unit, because it's been scuffling. And I would just maybe try Oliver Ekman-Larsson for a game or two. I don't know how long he'll be hurt or whatever happened to him tonight, but when he's back, I think he's got a chance to contribute there. He just can shoot it. He's a good passer. He's rangy. He can do that little walk the line move. I would like to give him another look up there. And it feels like they haven't done it barely at all this year. The second unit's been good, so maybe you don't want to break it up, but just start the second unit.
The top unit's a little cold right now, and I want to see what the faceoff percentages are to start these power plays, because it really has felt like since the break, and again, this is like a confirmation bias thing where they're losing every draw to start the power play. Puck gets like cleared, and then they're trying to set up. My counter to your thought is, I really do feel best on the power play when Mitch Marner's on that right side in the middle of the ice and able to just kind of pick apart teams with where he's going. He's been so hot. He's been so damn good. The way that he's reading the play right now, I don't want to mess with it. Maybe if it goes into a continuous slump, you switch it up. I like the fact that you have OEL there, but the second line's clicking, or the second power play is clicking. They've got three power play goals. I think the Leafs now, I'm drawing this off the top of my head from the beginning of the game, they had three power plays tonight.
Four.
Okay. So then I think that they're 3 of 13 since coming back from the break. And all three of those goals were scored by the second unit, two of which I think were by defensemen. So yeah, a beautiful pass by Domi, by the way, to set up that play, just gorgeous saucer pass over to OEL.
His dream. Like that's his dream play. That's the number one play he wants to do in the game every night. Yeah. Is see an open seam and fire a flying saucer across the seam. That's his dream scenario. Like there's no play he wants to make more than that one right there. And he does it beautifully when he gets a chance. That's such a sick pass.
I got to say though, now it's time for negative talk.
Uh-oh.
That's the only good moment that group of players had in this entire game. They were completely dreadful. They were absolutely, unquestionably, undebatably the worst part about this team tonight. Like even Bobby McMahon, I thought was pretty bad. He takes a horrific penalty in this game after he got a beautiful step to kind of create a play. He's just got that speed and that ability to drive the net. But boy, oh boy, if you're Nick Robertson and Max Domi and you had this little bit of momentum, right? Thinking, hey, maybe we're putting thoughts in people's minds. And Berube watched that one and he went, you're really not going to trade a 2026 first round pick to get me Braden Schenn when I got these two guys out there doing this kind of stuff.
Nick Robertson sets up their shorty that ties the game, right? Doesn't get the puck in deep, tries to make a hero pass where he turns up at the blue line, tries a saucer pass that just has absolutely no chance. And this is a product of a guy that's feeling it, right? Nick Robertson 3 weeks ago, he does not do that. He doesn't do that. Like he's feeling himself here. He's firing in the net. You know, he's feeling good about himself. He thinks he can make a little area pass, thinks he's Mitch Marner all of a sudden.
Yeah, very Marner.
Yeah. And they make a great read on it. And Cooley comes in and I got to tell you, I like that Cooley. Cooley a lot. I think the Leafs, if I'm not mistaken, I might be mistaken. If Luke or somebody could look this up for me, they might've taken one of the Ronies or the Topies a pick before him. If someone could look that up for me, it was either Ronies or the Topies, or it was somebody bad. They took one pick before that Cooley, but he's a rangy, big guy from the OHL, scores, hits, fights. God, he wouldn't look okay. He'd look pretty good in the bottom six right now for the Leafs. But Robertson, tough night for those guys. I don't know. Their normal stats weren't good. I'm sure their fancy stats were very ugly, and I didn't like a lot of that most of the game for them outside that Domi pass.
Yeah, they were awful. What I will say is it's unfortunate for those guys, because I do think that Robertson has taken strides this season. Mm-hmm. Even when he got crunched in this game, there was a moment where he's along the boards and he just got stapled and gets back up to his feet. And I thought, I haven't been noticing you fall down or have those kinds of plays as much recently. Good for you. It's just that the Leafs are in you got to have it year. It's just not the year where you're getting patience for some of these players, especially not Domi, obviously, given where he is in his career and the money he's making. But for Nick Robertson, this is the tough part is you're starting to see strides of the player, but you have a tough time watching a game like tonight. You're going to be more judgmental of the games like this than you are going to be optimistic about the good games when the window to win for you feels extremely pressing, right?
Yeah. Yep.
So 100%. That's just kind of where I'm at with it. Yeah. He was taken right after Roni.
Yeah. Why would you want a 6'3" left shot winger who's, 23 years old, born in Toronto, Ontario, played 4 years in the OHL, scored 43 goals. And it's like, why the hell would you ever want to draft that guy? Better take Roni out of the 5'6" guy out of Finland who's never going to play one game.
I think Roni's 5'9".
Oh, whatever. Good pick. Yeah. Good one, Doobie. Dude, solid.
One of the things that was driving me crazy this week, this is a little side tangent off of the game, they obviously hit on Nyes. And I think Robertson for a second round pick, if you look at the goals per games played, it's actually been pretty solid. You're fine with that production.
Not awful.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So they've had some hits. Part of the reason that they're in the position that they're in is just like, they gave up Trevor Moore and Durzi in that trade for Muzzin. And after that, it was like, they hit on no other guys.
No.
Like, those were the guys they hit on. They moved off of Sandin. They ended up moving Liljegren for essentially nothing. All the Ronies and the Topis turned into absolutely zilch.
The Topis is like a healthy scratch, the Marlies at times.
Yeah.
One of them, I don't know which one it is, but
they were trying to do things like, we're going to take Semyon Derarguchentsev in the third round. Literally, you want an actual 5'6" guy.
Just take the 6'5" guys out of the O after the first round. Like, every time, just take the 6'6" guys from the Dob and the O in the draft. If I'm just going full grapes here, but if I was a scouting director, just big guys out of the CHL after the first round. That's what I'm taking.
Just the lack of waves that they had and the guys they didn't develop outside of the first round.
One NHL game played from the 2020 draft.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, and then you look at all the
recover from.
Well, yeah, but it's tough to recover when you moved out so many picks before, right? Like, it's like, for renting Giordano, you moved out two seconds.
Yep.
And I think they gave up a third, actually. I think it was 2 seconds and a third for Blackwood and Giordano's rights for half of a season. Like, they move out the first plus for Ryan O'Reilly rental. They move out a first for Nick Foligno. They move out a first to dump the Marlowe contract.
Yeah.
They end up having you know what's crazy? What I was looking up, I completely forgot about this because it doesn't matter because the trade was already so bad. But do you know that they also gave up a third in the Kadri trade? Like, the Leafs, they were like, hey, yeah, we know we're getting browbeaten in this, but we'll give you a third round pick for it's just crazy that ended up happening. It's just they had to give up, I think, a second round pick to dump Nick Ritchie and bring in Ilya Labushkin, right? Who, what did he go for a couple of years later? Like a fifth?
I think the Leafs traded a third for him last year, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe.
They gave up a third for Edmondson. Anyway, whatever. It's just, it was so many things that went out the door and then no ability to actually hit on anybody else.
Well, here's the thing. A lot of teams that are in their competitive window trade first.
Yeah.
It's the seconds and the thirds and the fourth that you have to be able to find good enough scouting where you can find a guy that's going to come in and give you some cheap talent and they just haven't had it.
Annoying.
And that's hurtful.
It's just like, and that's why I'm like, it sucks going into this deadline a little bit right now, not to do too much deadline talk, but we're a week out. Like, it's, again, a bit of a slow night.
Yeah.
Like, when people are looking at these assets and they're like, oh, you can't get rid of two of these assets. It's like, those two assets you have compared to what other teams got in terms of where the draft pick is going to be likely, right? And what those prospects and how they're viewed around the league. I know that Leafs fans are hyper-focusing on their team and you get more in love, you fall more in love with the guys you have. But, I've seen this stuff of call teams, overwhelm them with offers and try to find other guys that aren't available. And I keep looking at it going, you really think other teams are around the league saying, we could get Fraser Minton in a 2026
versus Stanford. Holy smokes.
Let's give up our second line, third line young center. The Sabres are like, we can do Dylan Cousins for that.
That Noah Chadwick's undeniable.
They don't really have anything. No, okay. The cupboards are real empty and they're kind of trying to bluff their way into being able to get teams to accept the what little they have. Even Easton Cowan, who's the prize of the prospect pool, it's like he's having a down year. Don't let the point streak fool you. It has not been a stock up year for Easton Cowan.
Let me tell you, all it took was a little own sound attack visit for him to get off the schneid tonight. My beloved Bears lost 9-1 in London tonight. So I'm sure he had a couple points in that one.
Yeah, you're like, he stinks, 9-1.
How many points did he have tonight against my beloved Bears? I'm just looking it up quickly here on the OHL app. He only had 1 point. Bomb. Trade him. Had one goal. That Sam O'Reilly that the Oilers traded their pick for had a hat trick, so he was good tonight.
I don't have anything else in my notes. I'll give, since we're a little short here.
Disappointed Reeves and Rempe didn't fight.
Yeah,
always. I was hoping like, you know, I thought it was a good idea I respected the move big time by Berube to be like, hey, like he runs around and I want to have my guy in there too. It's an old school hockey mentality that I agree with. I don't think it deterred anybody from doing anything. I thought they were kind of on top of the goalie a lot tonight, but it's good for him to get back in. I thought he was physical. He got a couple third period shifts. I don't think it means anything going forward, but I got to give him credit when he has a good night. And I thought he was pretty effective tonight. And I like the move putting him in there, and I wish him and Rempe fought. That's my big Reeves Rempe. I wish they had a scrap. That would have been fun.
Rempe did have one little moment where he kind of got a little too cute with Stolarz.
Yeah.
Stolarz gave him a bit of a chop. Yeah. I thought, oh yeah, this is going to happen. And then there was another moment where the crowd was chanting Rempe. And I thought that both those guys were going to have a feel for the moment and go at it. And they didn't. Here's what I will say though. I'm not as disappointed by it for the simple reason that I don't think Rempe can fight. I just think he's a willing fighter.
Yeah. He's just a big, big Alberta boy that just wants to chuck.
Yeah.
Can't really do it.
Great. Right.
Yes.
Which I love. Oh, yeah. And maybe at some point in his career, he'll be able to do it. But yeah, all of his fights that I see, I'm like, this guy.
Getting speed bagged by Olivier every time I see him. Yeah.
This is true reckless abandon where it's not.
Has he won a fight in his career? I'm trying to think.
I have to go through it.
The Laurier fight last year where he just got like punched out. Olivier punched him out. Reeves beat him when they fought. Like every time he fought a big ticket fight. Like, has he even really had one tonight? I mean, this year? I can't think of one that he's really had. He had that huge suspension for the flying elbow or whatever. But I actually thought, like, he had a couple moments where he's good around the net and, like, he's a big body and he can go. Like, I think he's an effective player. Berube said the same thing. With a couple more years under his belt, if he ever, you know, skates a little bit better, he's never going to be, like, a star, but he can play in the league. He's effective. Yeah. He's got a role for sure.
I think, though, like, to your Reeves point, like, I don't think Reeves was good at all tonight. It's just that, like Rempe, when he has a big hit, you notice it. And there's so few hits now that it stands out more. Like,
yeah, what did Reeves end up playing? Like, here's a good night for Reeves. Play like around 10 minutes and don't be a minus. That's a good
night.
And hit three guys. That's a good night.
Don't be a minus, but you're not a minus because the goalie made 300 saves. You know?
He threw four hits tonight and the rest were zeros in a 902.
Yeah.
That's the Reeves hat trick right there.
Here's what I know about Reeves is I like the hits because it's nice to see.
Yeah.
I don't like really anything else when he's in the lineup, especially since he doesn't really fight anymore. But also, you know what my favorite Reeves play is? Is when he chips it in to the D zone and he gets off the ice. That's like, that's when I'm like.
Good job. Good punt, boys.
Yeah. Just go, you got the puck in deep and you're getting off the ice. Those are my Reeves. If I did like I asked them to get a Reeves highlight pack, that would be it. It's all the time.
A good hit. He hammered. Who did he hammer? Carrick? Yeah. Whoever he got. He got him pretty good. Had to hurt. But yeah.
Yeah.
Listen.
Their blue line was struggling.
Yeah, I mean, they're missing their best guy, right? It's just it's a trickle-down effect. Listen, he's not going to be playing any playoff games. So playing a couple games here, play maybe five or six more games down the stretch, mix them in here and there. But, you know, I do feel for Steve's, who I thought was pretty good in his time here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he gets ousted for a guy that just doesn't really play hockey. It's got to be a tough pill to swallow going back down to Utica or wherever you got to play tonight if you're Steve's. But, you know. But it is what it is.
Yeah. All right. Anything else?
I'm trying to think of anything else. No, not really. I do. Last quick thing. I do really love the visual of Madison Square Garden and just the games there. It always pops. And, you know, it always makes me think of Dion Phaneuf ending. Was it Michael Sauer, that poor Michael Sauer's career with that like hit when he had the puck on his stick along the far side boards in the offensive zone. I always think of that, but it's on a bucket list to go to a hockey game there. Doesn't have to be Leafs Rangers, but I just think it's an electric building. The crowd always looks so good. The jerseys, everything about it. There's just such an allure about it, such a sexiness about it. And it's a bucket list event for me to go to a game there. You said you've been to a basketball game there?
Yeah, only a hoops game.
Knicks?
I've seen there. Yeah, Nick. Well,
really?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't know if you went to like a
college game or something. Well, I guess I could see March Madness. Yeah.
They flew in my college team, my high school team.
It was like CSK Moscow exhibition game against Makai.
No, Italian. I thought maybe it was like Big East tournament or whatever they usually have there, right?
Knicks.
That's
Knicks
sick. Pistons. When?
Yeah, Knicks Pistons. 2014.
Must have been really cool.
Yeah, it was. It was very cool. They're like I said, walking into the building, you're like, damn, this is neat.
Yeah.
Like it was definitely like out of all the stadiums I've ever been to, that's like the one where like that by far is, other than when I was a little kid and I went to Maple Leaf Gardens for the first time.
Yeah, yeah.
And got to walk in, was like, holy crap. I got to do the tour.
No feeling like seeing the ice. There's just no feeling like seeing the ice.
Just a little kid and it was. It's like you go in, they give you the fake dressing room tour where they show you like the
sick,
like, hey, look, there's the equipment. And you're like, oh my God,
I will never see a thing cooler in my life. Than
no, that was genuinely like one of the greatest moments in my entire life. So
so if I win the lottery, I'll go see a Rangers game. Doesn't feel like a cheap experience.
No, I would say though that it's like, it is the home of the Knicks more than the home of the Rangers.
For sure.
Like,
no question. Yeah, totally agree with that statement, but I just, I think it looks like a great crowd. I like the, I've always had a little bit of respect for the Rangers. I think they're a cool team.
For sure. How could you not? How could you not? All right. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram at JD Bunkus, at Sam A. McKee. We love it when you reach out. We especially appreciate it when you hit thumbs up. If you're watching on YouTube or if you've subscribed to the podcast, even if you do watch on YouTube, the podcast subscriptions really help us out. You never miss a show. We got a busy week. Leafs play on Sunday. They've got a bunch of games. Yeah. They play 1 o'clock game on Sunday.
Yeah.
And then we've got just like, my show is basically going to be wall to wall deadline coverage. Already have a ton of guests lined up. Can't wait to hopefully be breaking down some significant Leafs moves. And then, I know you got the same thing. So yeah, loaded content week. So follow both shows, Real Kipper and Born, and the JD Bunkus podcast as well. Let's hope that this is a solid week for the Leafs. Another nice win. Opportunist.
Hey, win, baby. Just win, baby.
At the end of the season, they won't ask how. We'll see you Sunday afternoon.